Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to open the Senate Committee on Healthcare.
And I will call the House Committee on Healthcare together for this joint meeting. We'll be meeting for 45 minutes in this room, and then for the committee, for the House Committee on Healthcare, we'll be moving next door at 4 o'clock for the last piece of business.
Okay, I'm going to open an informational meeting on the update on the merger of PEB and OEB. And I see a panel in front of me, so I assume you're going to start us off.
We are, Madam Chair. I'm the kickoff speaker. For the record, Betsy Johnson, State Senator from District 16. Let me set the scene that brings us here today. At the end of the 2017 session, a legislative work group was convened to examine potential cost reduction, avoidance, and options in order to help reduce cost increases in future budgets and to institute prudent financial practices and principles for state government. The measure, Senate Bill 1067, is a compilation of actions related to that work and other proposals. So today we're here to talk about a couple of elements of 1067, specifically the requirement for PEB and OEB, and for people that are listening, the Public Employees Benefit Board and the Oregon Educators Benefit Board, to establish an executive committee, and we are three of those members, and you will hear more about the composition of the committee from my colleagues, but to establish an executive committee to develop a plan for the merger of the boards and to begin a combined administrative function and operations. The bill also required PEB and OED to adopt methodologies designed to limit growth in premium or per member health costs to 3.4% a year. There were other things that the bill did, but we are principally here today to report on the work of this executive committee. There are slides to accompany this, and I will resist the temptation to read my portions of it other than to say that this was an interesting group to work with. I think it was a very balanced group. It brought expertise from PEB in the person of Sean. It brought expertise from OEB. We worked, I believe, very collaboratively, and we're required by the bill to report our results to you in this short session. And it is to that purpose that we are here today. And I will just describe the membership so that you get a sense of the expertise that we drew. Sean Parkman, who is the PEB vice chair, Jeff Brown, the chair of the OEB board, Marie Moss Anderson, the OEB vice chair, Rob Gallinat from Lapine, who faithfully made the meetings, even in some of the most wretched weather. He was an absolute stalwart. John Larson from the OEB board, Mark Perlman, the PEB board, Bill Barr, the PEB board, and I was the legislative liaison in a non-voting capacity. So with that tee up and the fact that we started with a set of goals agreed to by the committee to try to reduce overall costs as prescribed in 1067, create efficiencies as described in 1067, eliminate duplication, and for many of us who viewed this as a somewhat simpler exercise than it turned out to be, having two benefit programs, one OEB, one PEB, was sort of the starting point, and simplistically believed, well, we'll just push them together and that'll be that. Not so much. This turned out to reveal the complexities involved in the conversation. And finally, an agreement together that we would try to maintain a member group focus in order, as many of our colleagues reminded us, that the efficiencies and the cost savings should not be carved out of the members of both PEB and OEB. So with those very high-level introductory remarks, I'll get to bat last when my two much more learned colleagues present the meat of our discussions. But I would simply say, again, with emphasis, I think many of us came into this with the naive perception that this was going to be a simple conversation, and it proved quite the contrary, and it was a genuine education for many to realize the complexities of these two systems and how they may fit together ultimately. So with that, Madam Chair, I will turn it over to my colleagues to get into the substance of our work product.
Thank you, Senator. Good afternoon. I'll start on page six, since that's where
Please
we are.
Please introduce yourself.
Yes, my name is Jeff Brown. I'm chair of OEB. And other than that, I'm retired, but formerly a health plan consultant for 38 years. Sufficient. Thank you. Well, kicking off as we review OEB and PEB, looking at the background on six, what comes to mind is exploring the differences between the two groups and what some of the challenges would be in merging them straight out. OEB insures over 240 school districts, ESDs, and counties, whereas PEB is more focused on state employees. So the structure for employer contributions is different. Within OEB, we offer the choice of plans that the various entities select for their groups. It can be one, it can be all, but the job of OEB is to provide value-added quality plans for choice, much like an exchange. PEB more directly represents the end users, their members. Similarly, contributions are determined differently. With OEB, the contributions are determined out at the individual entity. With PEB, it's done as part of the board function, I believe. As I mentioned, OEB does function as an exchange, and there are well over 300 different bargaining groups that select plans in OEB. So it really does make it really Oregon's first exchange in many respects, and has worked well since inception. Next page. The challenges from the analysis of our differences and the opportunities for merger is putting them directly together has a high risk for member and program disruption. It also has some interesting subtleties in terms of managing potential cost escalation. And then we have to pay attention to, or we feel honor-bound to pay attention to, meaning stakeholder engagement and satisfaction. And when we really delve into it, the opportunities for overall savings just really weren't there when we looked at it. It was about 0.5%. Next page. After several discussions facilitated by an outside trained group facilitator, the group explored different ways of merging the two organizations and narrowed it down to three models that we could go deeper in. And the first one is on the following page, which is the more simplified direct merger, perhaps the most literal of the merging them together. Complexities in that is that it really aligns all of the duties into one large group. My master's degree is in behavioral science and communication, and I know that the more channels of communication that are open, the slower a group moves. It would necessarily require reforming the board, rechartering, and restructuring the governance. We felt this to be a pretty cumbersome model of the three that we entertained. The second option on the next page is an emphasis on joint governance. It retains the two individual boards, but in a more limited capacity, charging those two boards primarily with benefit design, pricing, and carriers selection, and aligns under the joint governance board the operations, communications, wellness initiatives, and other non-risk contractual services. So that would be engaging a health savings account administrator, those things that are purely transactional and have no insurance joined with them. The third option that we explored put its major emphasis on innovation. In this case, what we did is, instead of building the governance together at the top, we put in between the two boards a joint innovation work group. This is has some roots in the OEB strategies, evidence and outcomes work group model, where ways to build more efficiency, to encourage people to better use of their benefits, ways to make it more efficient, are explored and then recommended to the board. In this case, instead of having a subgroup serving one board, we'd have a joint group with 2 to 4 members from each board. But in addition to just having members from the boards, we would welcome in participation from OHA, from the legislature. We built into our model that there would be a representative for at least discussion from the Senate, from the House. And what's promising about this model is we would hope that instead of having one group in one place and another group operating in another and another group operating that way, that we would have some synchronization and cohesion in discussing those topics of interest. It's also proposed that those experts from various elements or parts of the healthcare delivery system be brought in on a testimony basis, so we don't have any special interest in a voting capacity. And we think this really provides a lot of opportunity for interaction and pulling in expertise from a number of ways without then again bloating or overly enlarging this innovation work group. As you go down in that model, you can see that there is a shared services group. And again, this oversees those services that are more readily combined. It looks for marketing, for obtaining proposals for services that are non-risk related, working with staff in terms of operations, et cetera. So after looking at these three models, we created a comparison with key points. So in our areas of evaluation, we looked at cost savings. And across the board, you could say that really bringing these two pools together offer minimal savings. Both groups really have reached a level of size that provides most of the cost savings possible through their individual structures. There's another side element that goes with this. OEB is aligned with two carriers. PEB is aligned with two carriers. One on each of those is different. As we pursue these initiatives for more efficiency, cost savings, designs of delivery systems, we actually maximize by having two large purchasing groups that can forward these initiatives to two different platforms that reach out beyond these two boards and have the potential of influencing the balance of the state. It seems that there's been quite a bit of attention given to transforming the healthcare delivery system, and we think that this model really maximizes that opportunity utilizing the size of these two groups. Administratively, the savings were the same across all three models. The third item, bottom right hand, really restates that we think this has the highest level of potential savings through shared services and joint innovation. The next page, areas of evaluation. Model one as the lowest level of member group focus. Model two is somewhere in the middle, and option three is the highest level of member responsiveness with input from those people that we serve. Program flexibility and efficiency. Again, we gravitate towards the right side with option three having the highest level of flexibility. And that comes from the standpoint of how we're bargaining and how we're negotiating and the representation of the members, the users of the health plans. Program disruption is the lowest over on option three, highest on the straight merger model. And board education becomes more of a challenge under a straight combination and has the least impact on our option three. So I believe you've already can think ahead to the conclusion of where we're headed is we are coming in to our report generally promotes the option three. Sean?
Yes. Chair Greenlink, Chair Munis Anderson, members of the committee. My name is Sean Parkman. I'm the chair of the PEP board, and I was chair of this committee. As part of one thing that I don't think we mentioned explicitly is that all these slides that were drawn from a full report that we have copies for the members of the committee if you don't already have one. And we knew that part of the interest in this discussion, or it was our understanding, that part of the interest by the legislature in this discussion, part of it was understanding the potential cost savings or impacts, financial impacts of merging not just the boards, but also the risk pools of the boards. And so that has its own section in the report that if, for those that are following along with the full report with more detail and context, that starts around page 20 in the full report. And so Senate Bill 1067 required that we included that fiscal analysis in the report. We've already mentioned that part of this initiative was try to understand how we can contain costs, and the directives of both the OEB and the PEP boards is and has always been to provide affordable, comprehensive health insurance options at prices employees and employers can afford. It's with that understanding that we have this analysis about the merging of these risk pools. So there were, as we've mentioned up to this point, some challenges determining the fiscal impacts given the differences between the different plans. Because of the differences in the way that OEB and PEB are designed, the benefits are designed, there were several choices that needed to be considered related to fully insured versus self-insured insurance options. So basically, PEB is largely self-insured. Its largest plan is self-insured. OEB is fully insured. And so when it comes to considering the risk pools together, one has to make the choice of, do you consider that OEB would become fully self-insured, or would PEB become fully insured? And once that choice is made, there are consequences on cost savings, depending on which one you do. Or you can keep, a mixture, which would basically kind of cancel itself out because it would be more or less status quo. So option one is, sort of considering, making a hard decision of making both fully insured or self-insured. If OEB were to become self-insured, the analysis showed that there could potentially be some savings with that move. However, it would require an upfront investment of somewhere in the order of $60 to $70 million in order to create a reserve. So, you know, that's a hard choice. If PED were to become fully insured, the analysis showed that some of the cost savings that PED has been able to realize from its fully insured model would need to be given up, essentially. And some of the tools available to PED for cost savings would be sacrificed. There was the additional challenge that we've already mentioned. That was mentioned here as it relates to the challenge of coming up with a fiscal impact for all this, is that the plans, the plan years are on different cycles for OEB and PED. And that has some consequences about how you would move them to the same plan year as it relates to migrating one system to another for the purposes of fiscal impact. So, with this analysis, the overall sort of bottom line on the fiscal impact was that the cost savings are fairly minimal, more minimal than we had anticipated when analyzing. And Jeff kind of went over this a little bit. Basically, the board, the risk pools as they are now, are large enough independently to sort of gain some efficiencies. Putting them together doesn't create a new level of efficiency in the market, or if it does, it's pretty minimal and washed out by some other factors. And so they ended up being basically less than 0.5% overall as far as potential cost savings. And the there are some cost savings to be had for merging the administrative functions of PEB and OEB, but many of those, or not necessarily but, and many of those are already happening and will continue to happen. And so some of those cost savings have been realized. There could potentially be a slight benefit as well if PEB and OEB had the same insurance carriers, but again, those cost savings would be very minimal. So, having gone through that fiscal analysis and realizing that through that merger process or the risk pools, hypothetically, there wasn't much to be saved, we also asked for, you know, what could save some money, and there we did find some opportunities that are more detailed in the report for those that are following along around page 24. Some areas of potential. The opportunities for savings would be generated by increased efficiencies of claims and utilization through benefit plan design, majority choice of plan offerings, utilization of disease management efforts, provider and pharmacy reimbursement models, and advancing the organized systems of care. The ability to pursue these opportunities with OEB and PEB can be realized not by merging or mashing the two boards together, but rather through this innovative work group process, by the process of sharing data, best practices, and innovative partnerships between the two boards. So more explicitly, advancing coordinated care programs, supporting new payment methodologies with providers, and promoting efficient utilization of care by members are all opportunities that the two boards could explore together in this new structure. And it was our estimation that the Joint Innovation Work Group structure was a productive structure to pursue in order to capitalize on those opportunities that we identified. So, more explicit direct information about the combining of the administrative functions of the boards. OEB and PEB have undertaken joint RFPs in the past for ancillary benefits and have experienced savings with expanded buying power in those circumstances. And we continue to pursue those joint RFPs where they make sense. OEB and PEB have already started the process of combining administrative staff, and both have experienced a reduction in FTE of 14%, including the executive management level, over recent years. You can see on the slide the 2015-17 budget versus the 17-19. So, the conclusion here is that the committee recommends model option number three. Senator Johnson, did you want to?
Just a couple of concluding remarks. let me take this back down to a much more elementary level. I think when I approached this assignment early on, it was, why don't you just push them together, and instead of 150,000 lives on one side and 150 on the other, push them together and you got the buying power of 300,000. Not so easy, as Mr. Parkman has explained, with two different kinds of benefit packages. Why have two actuaries? I don't know how expensive actuaries are, but it struck me as buying those kinds of consultancy services for PEB and OEB made no sense. As we moved through, it became a little bit more obvious why that might have some benefit. I think the thing that I came away with that is the most valuable of this whole undertaking was the notion of using this innovation group to get us some common data platforms. And it goes all the way from the simplest. We don't know, for example, how many wellness programs exist throughout both the offerings. We don't know what our plans are offering. We don't know what we're offering. We have layered over the top of it now a wellness coordinator. And we don't know how much they cost, where they're duplicative, what the usage is. And so this combined model that has been presented by my two colleagues as our report to the legislature would be the place to begin to gather that data. On the simplest, look at how many wellness providers there are. On the most complex, look at hospital utilization, for an example, and be able to draw some conclusions based on the data. So one of the things that I, and perhaps I'm allowing my own bias to slip into this, is that I think with the selection of the new administrator on the announced retirement of Ms. Loretz, that there is a greater role for the agency and there is a greater role for the legislature. The back rooms, in my opinion, and again, this is my opinion, ended up merged largely out of the default of having lost the OEB administrator, but there might be a role where the legislature could play a slightly accelerated role, and certainly the importance of PEB and OEB to the Oregon Health Authority cannot be understated. So I think we have brought you a pragmatic recommendation based on what we all learned together sitting in the hermetically sealed room for hour after hour. I want to particularly acknowledge Ali Hassan, who did the lion's share of the work here. I joked that we were going to open up his office one day and find him dead over the desk. He pounded out an enormous amount of data, did research at the request of this group, typed up endless draft reports, and his contribution cannot be underestimated. Ali, you made this group happen, so I want to acknowledge that in front of the legislature. So with that, we would be happy to take any, I get the mushball questions, my two colleagues get the hard ones. But again, I will say that I came into this conversation with a pretty advanced degree of naivete about how difficult this conversation was going to be. And originally, when we began to coalesce around the notion of this innovation, I was worried that we would prolong the discussions and not get down to the meat of it. I've now been completely convinced that having this shared data platform, the expertise of both boards feeding in serious data collection that will inform decisions going forward is exactly the prudent place to begin. And so with that, I think we've concluded our presentation, mm-hmm. and we would be happy to take questions.
Okay. Representative Greenlee is going to start.
I just want to go backwards a little bit. I never did have the belief that merging the two risk pools would make a big difference, but could you run back through the notion of why a single expanded board, maybe having this innovation group reporting to it, doesn't work? Why two boards? Run through the analysis of why two boards is better than one single expanded board.
Well, I'll answer for the OEB side, and Sean can talk about the PEP side. The OEB board is formed with representation from a number of different points of view. There is a physician on the board. There are industry experts on the board. There are labor people on the board. There are management people on the board. And they are not lined up one for one. It is a broader base board charged with really coming to a conclusion of what presents the highest quality, most efficient plans for the schools and municipalities and so forth, ESDs, to choose from to offer to their employee groups. Our focus is on plan, the quality of the plans, and that's how the board is built. From an PEB perspective.
Yes, yeah, so one concept here, I think, is how large a board can be and still be a functional board. So if you end up with a board that's, you know, 20 some people, I think that can become a large board. The specialty or the specialization that the two boards have, I think, is something that the committee discussed for some time. The idea that the way that local school districts, for example, are choosing the plans, the negotiation cycle that is related to that was pretty alien to the members of the PEP board, which doesn't operate that. We have, for practical purposes, and we kind of have one employer that we're considering, whereas OEB has hundreds. So that dynamic's very different, and it soon became apparent that the learning curve for the dynamics that go into that are considerable. And so, you know, basically, you know, when considering the efficiency of having one group versus two, as you know, that's what this sort of analysis table in the report was trying to show, is the criteria that we ran through in order to consider the three models. But the bottom line is that there's a good amount of fear that there would be a loss of that specialization that the two boards have for the needs of the constituents that they're serving.
Let me also offer what I'm going to consider a more lay perspective, not serving as a voting member of either of the boards. They are so different in their character. The PEB board is a 4-4 board, 4 labor, 4 management. And I think that there has been, and I would be corrected if my observation is erroneous, but I think that as there was any discussion about benefits, that the PEB board at this 4-4 split became quite anxious about a diminution of input into what would happen with member benefits. I would say that, again, in my observation, a 4-4 board has perhaps not always yielded the most dynamic results, but they are completely different in their structure, and until there is a political interest in changing the composition of those boards, it was not something that we felt our committee was empowered or capable of negotiating to a satisfactory conclusion.
Well, I have the honor of sitting on that board with you as a non-voting member, and my impression is I frequently don't know which one is the management, which one is the labor representative. Occasionally it gets into issues of the fringe benefit, but it seemed to me the expertise in managing these two very complex programs could easily be managed, not easily, could be adequately managed by one properly organized single board, even though they would essentially have two or maybe more than two programs. But it just intrigues me if we can integrate the management function without integrating the leadership function. It's an interesting concept. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I would just add, in conclusion, the executive branch would certainly, the governor's office specifically, would have to be participatory because these are gubernatorial appointees, and this is not something that the legislature will unilaterally decide.
Representative Vile, or do you want to follow up?
No, I'm done. Thank you.
Representative Vile and then Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think most of the questions I had were answered. I do want to express gratitude for whomever put this together. It was really helpful to me in looking at this. I was particularly interested in the fact that Washington, with a mushed system, seems to have 40% more people trying to run the thing than we do. And I'm wondering, and I think this is where you've kind of answered the question, if this is not a good example of where the bigger a system gets, the less efficient it tends to get, and maybe keeping these in a separate place is the better alternative.
I think that our experience, Representative Vile, over the summer with this executive committee, which was four board members from each board, and Representative Johnson participating in.
Pardon? Senator.
Senator, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I'm sorry. I don't know why I'm nervous at 70 years old, but I do get nervous. is that we found it a fairly nimble organization. We were able to have direct dialogue and plow our way through the issues that had to be spoken. When we expand that group to be 12 board members on OEB, things do in fact slow down. There is the need to express each individual's opinion, whether that's additive or not. That's the reality of the way groups form. So we were able to move through this in about 5 months with very well-structured meetings and deliberately going through the salient points, compare and contrasting, and that led to this report. So the idea of a joint innovation work group with appointees from each board, of board members who have a particular interest in innovation and efficiency, promises to be one that's got a higher rate of engagement and enthusiasm and pursuit of good options.
We have 3 minutes to go. Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One, thank you very much for the work you did. I think it's a good work product, and I think it clearly outlines how complex the issue is. And I guess one of my observations is any change is going to have to be a fairly slow evolutionary change. But I think I'm inclined to agree with Representative Greenlee that it seems like if we knew what the direction was we're trying to go, and it's not entirely clear to me, that you might get there easier if you had a unified board to do that. One, the other option, it seems to me one of the problems we have with this is too many choices, which makes it very hard to get down to a restricted structure. And I guess one of the questions I'd have on that is, what I've been told, and I don't know if it's accurate or not, is that we obviously, the legislature said, trying to put a cap on increases to 3.4%. Yet my understanding is that the current offerings by providers are running over 5%. And I guess the question would be is, how do you get to the legislative direction, you know, in that kind of a structure?
Senator Beyer, you asked a couple of questions here. One is, let me start with the easier one, choice. Choice of plans was mandated in Senate Bill 426, which established OEB. The fact that we have the opportunity to serve so many different entities is that allowing choice provides an entry point for those new groups electing to come into OEB. And so to be able to pick a plan that more closely resembles the current offerings gives them an easier inroad rather than radically changing everything in one fell swoop. Second question was, sorry.
Evolutionary change versus rapid.
To some degree, starting with the Joint Innovation Work Group, sharing conclusions that are applicable to both boards is a step towards a unified board. Could be viewed as that. Mm-hmm. Whereas we come to conclusions and we submit those to the separate boards, there would be a synergy and a push for that to be jointly adopted. And it's the business of this proposed Joint Innovation Work Group that I believe has the greatest opportunity to affect change. We've been changing deductibles and out-of-pocket maximums and which PPO network and these various things since 1978. I was in the business that long. Went through the whole HMO thing, just all that. What we really need to do is transform healthcare delivery. And this recommendation puts the emphasis on transforming how healthcare is delivered and then bringing that forth with recommendation to the respective boards. I think that's where there's greatest potential.
Unfortunately, we're out of time, and I know that Representative Hayden had a question, but Bueller. So we're going to need to adjourn because of another committee. I apologize. So I am closing, or I'm adjourning the Senate Healthcare Committee, and you're.